Have you seen Chuck Norris lately? He's still kicking butt and staying active well into his 80s. What's even more shocking is he looks more jacked than ever and seems to have more energy than guys half his age. And it's all thanks to Morning Kick, a revolutionary new daily drink from Roundhouse Provisions that combines ultra-potent greens like spirulina and kale with probiotics, prebiotics, collagen, and even ashwagandha. Just mix with water, stir, and enjoy. Unlike other green drinks out there, this one tastes exactly like strawberry lemonade and has hundreds of five-star reviews. Go to roundhouseprovisions.com/save44 for up to 44% off your regular priced order. Plus, every purchase is backed by a 90-day money-back guarantee. So if you want to experience smoother digestion, a boost of energy, and just an overall healthier body, then go to roundhouseprovisions.com/save44 today. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. Results can vary.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hello, friends, and welcome to the MMQB NFL Podcast. I'm Connor Orr. Albert Breer's here. We are shaking off a little bit of sleeplessness after we... Well, you fell asleep during the Tom Brady roast.
I did.
I made it through...
That was after four youth sports events yesterday. Lacrosse, two soccer. So, yeah, that was why I fell asleep.
Well deserved. I made it up until Gronk, and then I realized just how hard it is to do stand-up comedy when you can pay really good joke writers to write jokes for you and you still can't deliver them. It makes for a very difficult evening.
What percentage of people there last night wrote their own jokes?
The comedians.
Right, Hart. Right. Like,
well, I don't even know if Kevin Hart wrote his own jokes, to be honest with you. Right. I mean, yeah. Kevin is to that level, probably, where you probably get some help with that, you know?
Right. Right.
But Edelman, like, do you think you think Julian Edelman's got some sort of hidden comedic talent? I don't know. Possibly.
Probably not. Probably not.
Randy Moss was awful. And the only funny athlete actually was Drew Bledsoe. And I think he actually practiced it.
Bledsoe was the star of the dynasty too, though. You know what I mean? Like the documentary.
Yeah.
In that, like, I think he has really good perspective on all of this, and he's separated enough from all of it where he can genuinely laugh at himself. You know what I mean? Like, and he has like this deadpan delivery that, like, I don't know, it just works for the subject. You know.
What I enjoy about everything, like, you know, people at home, the lay person will be like, oh, I wish I was Tom Brady or I wish I was Bill Belichick. Do you? Yes, it's going to be cool to go down as the greatest football player of all time. But these things are excruciating because, you know, we're sitting there and we're like, oh, is Bill going to sit next to Robert Kraft? And are they going to, what jokes can't we tell about Robert? And then, like, what are we going to be able to say about? And everybody in that entire organization is still vying for credit, is still sensitive about how this whole thing went down.
Oh, no question.
You know, okay, yes, this isn't me saying don't shoot for the stars, but it is a little bit funny to be like, you know, you do something this great and incredible, and then for the rest of your life, you're still like, well, it was actually me who did this part, and it was actually, you know, I had.
And you're stumbling around trying to be graceful about it, so it's not blatant, but like,
you can't.
It's impossible for it not to be blatant, right?
Like this came to mind. I'm reading Richard Ben Kramer's book on Joe DiMaggio, right? Mm-hmm. And Joe DiMaggio was at Mickey Mantle's enshrinement, whatever they do, like the center field monuments in the book. Yep. And he is fuming because there were Mickey Mantle commemorative baseballs that Mickey was able to sign and make money off of. and Joe didn't get the chance to do that. And this is after a legendary baseball career, and you're upset about probably what amounts to, now I think Joe ended up needing the money, right? I think Joe DiMaggio lost all of his money, but like you're griping about like what ends up being like $100,000, and you're one of the most legendary baseball players of all time. It just goes to show that like no matter what stratosphere of life that you reach, there's going to be the petty, like idiotic problems that we still deal with. Like Tom Brady and Robert Kraft and Bill Belichick probably all feel as complicated and as, you know, whatever, you vacillate in your feelings toward one another as we do like relatives at Christmas, where you're like, ah, I hate that guy, I don't want to sit next to that guy, or that guy really pisses me off, you know?
Well, I mean, like, wasn't Kraft was like in this like weird separate area with his bodyguard, right? Like he wasn't with, I mean, Bill was there and he was in the mix with all the players, and then they'd cut to a different camera to show Kraft, who had his bodyguard next to him, but nobody else was really in this camera shot, which I thought was weird. The whole thing was weird.
And apparently you were allowed to say a lot of things, but you weren't allowed
not go down to South Florida and and visit a strip mall down there.
It's like, I think this is emblematic of everything, though, right? It's like, even when the NFL tries to dress itself down, you know, when Roger Goodell takes off his tie and everyone tries to be like cool and businessy, it only exposes more the fact that like these are the most high-wired, sensitive people on planet Earth. And it's just so funny that like no matter what, like, you know, you try to dress it down, you try to make it cool. Like, remember when there was like Norm MacDonald was a legend and did the ESPYs. But then I believe Rob Riggle did it one year after Bountygate. And he talked about the Saints being in salary cap trouble. And then he said something like, if only there was a fund laying around, you know, that had some extra cash in it, you know, and Drew Brees looked like you just robbed his house. You know what I mean? And these people cannot for one second laugh at themselves. And I think that is like that was my big takeaway from all this, right? Is like, there are funny moments mostly for comedians who do this for a living or by comedians who do this for a living. These guys are going to live in this insane bubble forever.
It was great too. Cause like if the moment where they had, and I only saw the video on Twitter. So if there's more context to this, please add it for me, Connor. But what I saw in the video on Twitter was when they brought Kraft and Belichick up to do the toast or whatever, or take the shot. Belichick put his arm around Kevin Hart, not around Kraft. Like, had the stone face, like, all right, get me off the stage as fast as you possibly can. I'll participate in this little stunt just because I don't want to turn this into a huge incident, but I want the hell off. I want the hell out of here.
Man, oh man. It is funny though. I will say, and this is like the last thing, because I mean, not that I'm worried about giving this thing oxygen. Like, it was funny. I mean, Nikki Glaser is one of the funniest comedians on the planet. I thought she was really funny. And really kind of, I think, did the best job out of anybody at putting together a half decent roast. But it is interesting. It's sort of the lingering deal here now with the Gerard Mayo thing. And we're going to get into a little bit of a potpourri, a mailbag, and we're going to talk schedule release. But my lingering thought from the Tom Brady roast is this. If Belichick somehow gets a job, which, you know, reports are that Kraft really did a number talking Arthur Blank out of it, or at least that's what some people are saying. Kraft denies it.
And I think like if you read that, it's probably Belichick's belief too. Like, I just, you know, as well sourced as Seth is and Donna is, like, as much as when those guys' fingerprints are on the story, my guess is that if you read something like that, like, that some people believed that Kraft like firebombed Bill's like chances of getting that job, like, sort of feels like Bill would be one of those people that believed that.
Right.
Right.
And so let's imagine that Bill gets back in next year with the Cowboys, the Eagles, you know, one of these teams. I don't know. Yeah. I don't know where it's happening, you know, but if he gets back in and has success, there's only one finger left, right? Pointing back at it. And it's like, okay, you did have a great head coach. You did have a great quarterback. And you know, I don't know. It goes back, you know, it's this sensitivity, right? It's everyone jockeying for credit. and position.
Yeah, and I think in Kraft's defense, like one thing that's interesting about this to me is how fragile an owner's legacy is. It's way more fragile than a coach's or a player's because nobody really knows how much an owner is doing to make it happen. I mean, they're all writing checks, so that's part of it. But like how much do they have actually, how much do they have to do with separating their football team from the other 31 football teams and doing it better, right? And I always think of the examples of Jerry Jones and Eddie DeBartolo. Jerry Jones was the owner of the team that of the team of the 90s, and DeBartolo was the owner of the team of the 80s. What do you remember Eddie DeBartolo for?
I mean, I'm
the riverboat thing?
Well, there was some sort of a controversy, wasn't there?
Yes. So people my age, and I guess we're showing our generation gap here, Connor, our 8-year or whatever it is generation gap. But like,
you
I think
look
most
better than me, so it's fine.
I think most people my age would say you remember him for the gambling scandal in Louisiana.
That's
right.
It was gambling.
So
right. Yeah.
And like, but when I was a kid, he was seen as like the gold standard of owners in all sports. And like how they treated their players and how they were kind of like the Tiffany of major sports organizations. And it took like one scandal to completely flip the narrative on Eddie DeBartolo. Jerry Jones, same thing. What do people remember? Like, what's Jerry's enduring legacy as an owner? It's probably the breakup with Jimmy, right?
Right. And just generally being like a clamorous
right.
You know what
and
I mean?
And that's like the biggest example of it. So people don't remember him for winning 3 Super Bowls, which he has more trophies in the case than what all but like probably 2 or 3 other owners.
Yeah.
But like what he'll be remembered for is like that the collapse of that whole thing. And
letting
like,
Dak Prescott go to free agency.
Right. So like
what to do.
Yeah. So like for Kraft, I mean, there is probably that like unease of like, you know, for Bill and Tom, like I think they know, and we don't need to turn this into a legacy argument over the last 20 years in New England, but for Bill and Tom, like they know ultimately their legacies are going to revert to what they did on the field, right?
Yeah.
Like no matter how many bad things happen with Belichick, I mean, short of like it, I hate to say, like short of like an O.J. Simpson situation, like people are going to remember him. Like it's not the first thing O.J.'s, like people don't think of 2,000 yards anymore with O.J. Simpson, right? Like, but that's sort of the bar. Like everybody else, like LT did a lot of bad stuff. People still remember him as the football player, right?
True.
People still remember him as the great football player. So like, I think for Bill and Tom, like in the cases of both those guys, it's like, oh, ultimately things are going to revert to what they did on the field. And it's just not that way with owners, you know? So that I think is where like a lot of like the insecurity comes with owners and their legacies. And I think in particular Kraft in this situation.
So I'll put it to you this way. Here's how I always looked at it, right? Everyone's saying, well, Belichick was a great head coach and he was a terrible GM. That's where the owner comes in. If he was a bad general manager, okay, then you get him a general manager. And everyone's like, oh, well, Bill would have never done it. He would have refused. He would have gone somewhere else. Well, if he's such a bad coach, then why are you worried about it? If you're such a good owner, why don't you just hire another coach that's so good? Why wasn't Gerard Mayo ready earlier? You know, why wasn't any of this stuff in place? Like, if it was so bad, which you are now leading everybody to believe via the production of this, you know, Apple documentary or whatever it is.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not trying to swing hammers here, but it's like, that's what an owner does, right? An owner makes the over the top decision to be like, hey, I need a GM here. And if Bill's like, okay, well then I'm packing up and leaving, then that's your job to be like, okay, see you later. Cause that's what you did anyway. You let him go anyway.
Right. So, and so like he like was reaching for credit for holding the whole thing together, but doesn't want any blame for it ending, you know? And it's just, it's like this selective memory of the way history played. And I think they all have it, right? Like, and I think that that's what like last night shows. Like, I do think to some degree, like in all these jokes, there is a reality, you know? Like there's a
subtext to it. Yeah.
Right. Like did Brady just admit to Deflategate?
Pretty much.
I mean, like that seemed like he did.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's just interesting that way because I do think like one thing that these sorts of events can do is like they're dressed up as jokes, but like there's like probably some real feelings that are coming out. Like this is my chance to lay down the gauntlet. Where I can do it in a way then that's probably not going to offend everybody.
Right. Poor Julian Edelman kind of got the brunt of that one, and Alex Guerrero yesterday too. But one thing it just brought to mind, like, you know, wanting credit and not wanting the blame, before we get into this. So the other day we're trying to teach our kids about cleaning up and taking care of their stuff. And we have this like cool little mirror that you can use to put makeup on and stuff. And we always tell the kids, clean it up, clean it up, clean it up. And so I'm clumsy, and it was on the floor, and I stepped on it. I shattered this thing, right, the other night. And then so everybody comes in for, like, the big family, you know, meeting when it's discovered on the floor. And so, you know, everyone's like, well, who did it, you know? And I'm sitting there
being like, you're like the guy in the hot dog suit.
Yeah, and I'm like, well, the important thing is not who did it. The important thing is that it was on the floor, and it shouldn't have been on the floor. And so I'm trying to, like, I'm trying to craft my way out of this situation by being like, no. Yeah, we're asking the wrong question here. We're asking, you know. And so all I can say is that I ended up having to come clean on it, and it doesn't feel good, you know. But just do it soon.
It feels better after, though. It does feel better after. It does feel better after, because you don't want to be carrying that around. Like, I've, you know, like, spilled things in various places around the house because I too am clumsy. I'm the dad who steps on the Lego and hops around on one foot for 10 minutes in complete agony. So yeah, I've knocked some things over in, I'd say, inopportune places that may have led to purchases where I have made the argument like, hey, that's just a little like red wine stain, or that's just a little food that fell there on that rug. You don't need to throw that rug out. And sure enough, there's a new rug that's landing on the porch a few weeks later.
All right, let's get to some mailbag questions, kind of takeaways. You can read this on si.com too. Albert's got some takeaways up. We're preparing for the schedule release. It's kind of a nice little quiet time, so it's a good time to digest the draft, kind of see what's going on here. And the one that I wanted to talk about first was the AJ Brown deal, which you kind of had an item on in your takeaways that were up on Monday.
What are your
immediate thoughts on this? I mean, I love the fact that Howie kind of always gets ahead of this. And to me, getting that deal done before Justin Jefferson makes all the difference.
Yeah, it does. And I think, you know, it's interesting because the Eagles have used this mechanism that we've all talked about, but they've used it super aggressively. It's, you know, the concept of void years. And maybe you can explain this better than I can, Connor, for the casual listener, but basically what you're doing is you're putting fake years on the end of contracts to spread cap hits out. So you're basically putting, like, the real dollars are in the contract, but you're putting the cap dollars into years that don't exist in the contract. So you're making things easier for yourself in the here and now and pushing all of that off into the future. Well, what that does is that creates more flexibility now, which explains why the Eagles have been able every single year to improve their team in certain ways that usually teams that are in their position can't. So functionally, what does that mean? Well, they're the 13 biggest contracts on their team. I went through this. The 13 biggest contracts on their team all have phony years on the back end. And into those phony years, there's almost $400 million in cap spending.
Wow.
Into those fake years. So my first thought was eventually that's going to bring upon a reckoning, right? Eventually, like, those $400 million don't just go away. So, you know, after digging around a little bit, it does mean a couple things. Number one, it's an enormous commitment from the owner. So Jeffrey Lurie deserves credit for this, in that he's spending money now that's being accounted for later in order to keep the team as competitive as he possibly can. And in doing things this way, there's more cash going out the door right now to guys like AJ Brown that won't be accounted for on the cap until later. And they've continually done this, so that means he's constantly got cash going out the door. So he deserves credit for that, because not all owners will do this.
No.
The second piece of it is that it does create a little bit of a tightrope for Howie Roseman and his personnel department, in that they have to keep getting contracts right. Like, because you have to be able to judiciously offload these guys over time And you can't have it where you're like dumping like five or six of them at once, because then all of that, those cap dollars will come and hit you at once. And now you're in a reset year. So it's just interesting because it takes the spending of ownership and it takes a certain confidence in the personnel department that when they're paying guys, they're paying the right guys. And if you notice, a huge part of this is drafting well, because it keeps the bottom of the roster cheap. And then the guy, like when a lot of the guys you're paying are guys that you brought up through the system, well, you've got more confidence that those are going to work out long term than somebody you're bringing in from the outside. So I just thought it was really interesting in that, like, I mean, AJ Brown's deal, I believe, do you have it in front of you, Connor? I think it was like something like there's like $53 million in phony years on that deal.
Yeah.
Right. So like, that doesn't mean the money's fake, to be clear.
Yeah.
Yeah. That doesn't mean the money's fake. That means the money is accounted for in fake years. So if they cut him tomorrow, a lot of that accelerates and hits the cap. And so A, they have to get this right. And B, you know, again, it's a tribute to ownership and that they're willing to spend cash over what the cap is on an annual basis this way.
The other one, you know, kind of fell by the wayside because of the timing of it, was the Travis Kelce. Well, you made the point that it's not really an extension, right? It's a 2-year deal.
Raise.
Yeah, he gets about $4 million bumped up. The timing and the window of it is kind of interesting to me, right? Where it's like, you know, I talked to his position coach, Andy Reid, a lot of people last year when we did a piece on Travis for the Sports Person of the Year issue. And there's a belief that there is this kind of untapped potential in Travis's career that's yet to be seen. But I don't know. I think that there's also a good argument to be made that maybe last year was not the beginning of the end for him, but
right.
Certainly that he looked like a little bit more of a limited player. He had some high highs and he also had some pretty low lows, you know? And so I don't know. I mean, to me, this thing doesn't work without Travis. And I know that they've taken some mid-round swings on the tight end position in hopes that, you know, someone can come in there and eventually replace him. But this to me is, you know, at least an indication that we need, that they view this as, you know, we need him, and that maybe this is the indication of about how long he wants to continue playing at this point.
Right. And I think what's interesting about this one is that it's just, you know, I think it's in a way like also a thank you to him, because he has the impact that a receiver has, right? And the reason they were able to offload Tyreek Hill and save the money on Tyreek Hill is because they have him, and because he can draw coverage and he demands attention from the defense and he is a security blanket for Patrick Mahomes in the biggest moments. And, you know, so I think in certain way, it's like, because he has that TE next to his name instead of a WR, like they've been getting a bargain on him forever, you know? And I had this in the column. I mean, that if you look at it, like his contract, right? So at $17.125 million per year, he's making less than Jerry Jeudy will in Cleveland. He's making less than Christian Kirk is making in Jacksonville. He's making less than Deontay Johnson is making in Carolina. Like, what are we talking about?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, you're paying a guy deep into his 30s, but this is a guy who came up big even after it looked like the wheels were coming off during the year. He was able to summon it at the end when they really needed it. And you're getting that for the price of Jerry Jeudy?
Not bad.
Right. And at the same time, you're showing your locker room, hey, this is, we're going to reward this guy the same way you did with Chris Jones. Like, this guy's a guy who's done everything right. He's one of our core guys. And I think, like, honestly, like, that's where some great teams can, you know, like the Patriots, like, for as great as they were for all those years, like, that was where they would run into problems sometimes, is when it looked like they were screwing their star players. And the way that would resonate, I think you saw that, not to go back to it, but you saw that in the Dynasty documentary, some of the hard feelings the team, like, players had for the team, was because of things like that.
Yeah.
And so I think that there's an intrinsic value in rewarding someone like Travis Kelce and saying, no, we're taking care of this guy. Like, this guy is, like, one of the most important people in the organization. I mean, I think we've all told the story about the speech he gave the night before the Super Bowl and how much that meant to everybody in that locker room. And so to me, it's like this is a small price, like a $4 million bump and guaranteeing the money. You're not cutting the guy anyway. Is a small price to pay for what he can bring to the table for you in the biggest moments, what he's done for you, and the signal that it sends the locker room.
You two can slam into your coach and almost knock him over in the middle of the Super Bowl and earn a $4 million raise. What's the I have a you brought up something completely unrelated. I'm going to go on a rant in a second, but what is the most embarrassing thing that you've ever done to a boss, whether on purpose or on accident? And one time when I was working for the league, I was out with someone who, great person, handled it phenomenally well, but could have ended my career in a second. And I had a bottle of sriracha.
Yep.
And I gave it a good shake because it seemed like it was sitting there for a while. And I blasted this dude with sriracha, and probably I'm just saying I still love this person dearly, but probably the pants cost more than everything that I had in my suitcase at that point. So, I rocked him with hot sauce and I think I got another contract after that. So I was okay. I like Travis Kelce. I managed to survive.
I like that one. I have a bunch of stories from, working over at NFL Network that can't be told here. maybe calling people out publicly for something. I was a little bit more of a loose cannon in my earlier years.
We all were.
Yeah. Let me think. If there's anything like that, I don't know if I have a good one. I'd really have to think about this. Maybe you come back to me.
All right,
Maybe come back to me. I really have to think about that one.
You brought up, it triggered something.
I mean, there was when they caught, there was when I was 25. this was when I was covering high schools. I was 24 maybe, covering high schools at the Metro West Daily News, small suburban paper. Great staff we had there. Mike Reese, Tom Curran were guys who went through there. It was an awesome little newspaper and one that it was in the area I grew up in. And so I was, still at that age where you're going out all the time and everything else. And I got into a bar fight and I hit someone in the back of the head and broke my finger. And so if you've ever worked one of these jobs, if you ever worked one of these jobs where you're covering high schools, a big part of the job is going out and covering games, but then it's also coming in and taking scores, right? You're sitting there and you're taking the field hockey score, the volleyball score. So a huge part of your job is typing. Well, I had a broken finger on my right hand. I have what's called a boxer's fracture. And the excuse that I came up with for my boss was that I had fallen down a set of stairs and he did not have time for that. And thank you, Craig, for not firing me. But that was one where it was you're not as smart as you think you are, Mr. 24-year-old. Like, your boss does have an idea of what might have happened there. So, yeah.
You brought up the Panthers.
That was the best. I don't know if that really fit, but that was just something that popped in my head. Yeah.
It's a good story. I'm going to rant for 1 second because you brought up Diontae Johnson and the Panthers, and this has nothing to do with anything, but I figure, I got some scores to settle. So I have Google Alerts set up for my name. Do you?
Yep. Oh, no, I don't. No.
Okay. No. So
I don't want to know. I used to read the comments on my stories and everything else. I stopped doing that. I feel like it's like a healthier existence.
Yeah, I need to get there. I'm definitely not. And So I did the post-draft power rankings. And I don't know. Who would you put at 32, Albert? Who's the worst team in the league right now?
Carolina, right?
Right. I don't know. How else? And so I'm getting all these Google alerts and my name's coming up and it's saying SI writer Connor Orr wildly disrespecting the Panthers. And I was like, wildly disrespecting? What? And they're like, they made all these upgrades in the offseason. How are they still the worst team in the league?
Was
how
David Tepper like the ghostwriter on these posts?
Possibly, but like, how are
I mean,
they
he
not?
He is kind of sensitive, right?
Maybe. We need to get him roasted. But how are they not the worst team in the league? Like, I don't understand this. Like,
they are, right?
By right now, right now. And again, Bryce Young could have a CJ Stroud year and we could all laugh and we could say that I knew or I didn't know or how silly does this guy look? But like, what team are they better than right now? The Titans?
Like, I'm just going through like in my head, the draft order, right? So like, the Commanders and the Patriots, I think both of them are better than the Panthers. The Cardinals, I feel like have a chance to like kind of break through this year, you know, and like be a decent
maybe
team.
Maybe the Patriots?
Like, maybe the Patriots, yeah. They would be the one. I think the Chargers, they're the fifth pick. Like, they're going to be a lot better.
The Chargers are going to make the playoffs this year.
Yeah, the Chargers might make the playoffs. Like, the Giants aren't bad. And, yeah, I don't know. Like, are they in a category by themselves? Like, I don't even know if it's, like, that huge an argument. Now, like, Dave Canales can, you know, print these quotes out and put them up on the bulletin board and everything else. But this is just based on, like, in front of our face right now.
Dave, I think, is going to do a really good job. I think that team is going to be. I think that team is going to be good. But right now, I mean, maybe, you know, it's hard. Like, I would love to see Dave's power rankings or David Tepper's power rankings. But, like, right now, you know, they got to be 32.
I would love to see Tepper's power rankings.
Probably has them like sixth.
Give me a Google alert for that when that goes up.
I still have all my Google alerts for when my first day on the beat as a Jets beat writer. So every time someone mentions the name Sean Ellis, I get an email, and it's still like to this
but
day.
But Sean with a U, right? So it's probably S-H-A-U-N-L, a little less common.
S-H-A-U-N-L, right. Yeah. And then Santonio, I have a Google alert for Santonio Holmes, LaDainian Tomlinson, Mark Sanchez. I don't know how to turn them off. And so
I don't have any Google alerts. I've never had any Google alerts.
That was back before you could get, which the true nightmare for beat writing was to get the Adam Schefter tweets texted to your phone.
Yeah.
That was just about, well, and I had all the other beat writers' tweets texted to my phone. So like Rich Cimini and Kim Martin and, you know, all these other, Brian Costello, all these amazing people who I'm like competing with, and I'm horrified that they're going to, and they always did get better stuff than me. And, you know, but sometimes, you know.
See, like, that's the modern version of like, I'm just old enough, like not by much, but just old enough to remember going and picking up the competing newspaper.
Yeah.
Like, see, I think, are you too young for that? Like, what you're talking about is like the horror of like when I was doing work for the Herald, when I was at Metro West covering the Patriots in 05, 06, 07, I lived in the North End in Boston. And I remember walking down to the store and picking up the Globe and like legitimately being afraid to see what was in the paper, because that was still back in the day when people saved stuff for the paper.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, so. Yeah. Like, there, like you didn't put your best stuff on the internet. Very forward thinking by all the newspaper editors back then. because it really made you feel like crap if somebody had something in the paper, because you couldn't put something to respond to it in the paper for another 24 hours.
Yeah, that was.
So it's the same thing. It's the same concept.
It was the same concept. It's just at like warp speed. But then you would have these nights where like, you know, one of the other people on the beat was like live tweeting, you know, an episode of the X Factor, you know, and so you're getting all these messages on your phone and you're panicking because you think like, oh, Darrell Revis probably just signed like a 5-year extension, and it's like, no, someone's just watching, you know, someone's watching Fear Factor and tweeting about it, and then I'm getting all these messages. The last thing that I was going to go over real quick, my least favorite of the NFL holidays, Albert, is the schedule release. I think it's absolutely ridiculous, but I understand the NFL wanting to do it this way because, you know, we're in a money-making enterprise, and this is what you do. You make money off of things. And so
keep feeding the beast, and there's nothing going on in May, so they needed a tentpole event, so there you go.
And so let's do it at 8 o'clock at night, because all these guys who cover the NFL have nothing better to do on a Thursday than stay up until 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning writing about the games that we already know. We just don't know what order they're in. Is there anything in particular you're looking forward to? And, I have two things kind of off the top of my head. One, obviously, is that we're going to get another Harbaugh Bowl this year, which is going to be so good. And I wonder,
curious, Thanksgiving night.
You think that's going to be Thanksgiving night?
I mean, I would think so. Did they do that before with something like this? I thought they did.
That would be a fun Thanksgiving.
So, like, that would be my guess. Would they love those tie-ins because it makes them feel like they're very, very clever to think of that, even though we're thinking of it right here, right now. I don't know. Like, I'm interested to see just how shameless they are about, like, putting teams in impossible situations at the end of the year to serve the television partners.
Yeah.
Right. Like, cause like inevitably the end of the season, like the teams that are going to get screwed are contenders because they know, like, they're not going to put they want ratings on Christmas Day. So they're not going to put, sorry, Panthers, Carolina on Christmas Day.
Albert
right?
Breer wildly disrespects Panthers.
So write
that.
So, but you know what I mean? Like, so like, it's going to be the teams that are going to be playing deep into January that are taking the bullet there. So I'm always interested to look at that. I think, you know, the international stuff's always interesting to me. Yeah, I mean, I guess it's just like just how far they go with spreading games in through the week. And like, I almost feel like having games on Christmas Day, when Christmas Day is a Wednesday, is like opening a massive Pandora's box where they're going to just do whatever they want now, you know?
Yeah.
Because it was like, I mean, think about that. Like, again, like those aren't going to be bad teams playing on Christmas Day, right?
No.
So you're going to have teams playing in weeks, I think it's going to be wind up being weeks 15, 16, and 17. You are going to have contenders playing Sunday, Saturday, Wednesday.
You know what we need? We need.
But what about the bonus bye in the back end?
We need.
There you go, Roger.
We need a player who is willing to stand up for Christmas and to not play on Christmas Day. How good would that be? I have my routine, man. I like waking up.
Well, no, but we've seen them respect religious holidays in the past, haven't we?
Well, there was always the
there was that thing with like Rosh Hashanah, wasn't it? Like the Mariners were really upset that I think they put them. I think it was like a Monday night or something like that. Yeah. I forgive me, I don't know how like that. I don't know how the Jewish holidays work exactly, but I think it was like a Monday night, where the Giants were really like legitimately upset that they got scheduled on that night. And so like on one end that's happening, but then on the other end, let's jam three games on the Christmas when Christmas is on a Wednesday.
It would be so good if I was like a quarterback of like a contending team.
I'm a big fan of all of these contradictions. I'm sorry to interrupt you. They're just all these contradictions.
It's very funny. But imagine, like, you know, I have a great Christmas morning. Like, I wake up you video the kids and they're running to the tree and you got all this, you got everything going on. And then when there's a lull, we take a break and then I go over to Mountain Lakes Bagels and I get bagels and I get coffee and then we come back and we have coffee and bagels and then we go for round two of the presents. And then we have all this, you know, we eat the leftovers from Christmas Eve dinner and then you just eat all day and it's great. If I was just like a quarterback of a contending team, I'd be like, yeah, I'm going to do that instead. I'm not going to play on Christmas. We need someone to do that. The first person ever to just be like, yeah, no, I'm not. I'm good. I'm not going to play, you know? And then
I wonder who that would be though.
Who do you think loves Christmas more than anybody else in the NFL? Kirk Cousins.
It might've been Gronk before he retired.
Gronk, that might have been one of the best jokes from the roast last night. Was a comedian said, thank you, Gronk, for taking a break from writing letters to Santa Claus to be here tonight. That was funny. I thought that was cool.
I actually like legitimately love Gronk telling jokes just because of how funny he thinks he is. It is a joy to watch him up there because it's like, when he delivers a line, you can see it. Like, and if you're not watching on video right now, you can't see this. So sorry about that. But he does after he tells a joke, he's like, satisfied with. He's like, like that.
Meanwhile, there's just like all these legends of comedy that have written that for him, and they're just like, oh my God, I wouldn't have done that that way. All right.
It's just impossible. It's just impossible not to like him. You know what I mean? Like, he's just, I don't know. Like, it's really, really hard to watch him. And like, it's just like, there's something that's so like just endearing about like how like clumsy is the word, right? Like how just kind of like oafish and clumsy he is.
I promise I'll get back to my schedule point in 1 minute, but you bring up a good point. And that I think what it is for me is it's a deep seated, like in high school, right? The best athlete was also like, you know, then you also get to be, you know, prom king. And then you also, yeah, you know, and some of them were also like musically inclined or really smart. And I think that there was something.
Yeah. Like the kid for us was like Damian Rumetz wound up being like a two sport athlete at Dartmouth. You know right. what I mean?
And so like, so, to me, that was like, that's not fair that all of that, you get all of that. Yeah. And so when I do take a little bit of self-satisfaction when I see athletes go up and totally bomb and not be aware of that. And I do think that there is something like enjoyable about that for me, because it's like, at the end of the day, we all have our gifts. We all have our strengths. We all have our weaknesses. My weakness is podcasting, but we're gonna muscle our way.
We're working on it.
My last scheduled take here is that, you can accuse this of being an obsession of mine, and totally fine, but I feel like we are at a point with the Browns where, and I don't think they officially did extensions yet for the head coach and the GM, and if I missed that, correct me, but we are now going into year 3 of the Deshaun Watson deal. And mm-hmm. I think that the layout of their schedule is going to be fascinating to me, because it is hypercritical. First of all, you don't re-sign Joe Flacco because, you know, I would guess that to some degree, they probably really liked Joe Flacco, and the fans really right. like Joe Flacco, and you don't want people booing Deshaun Watson to get Joe Flacco. Right.
Like,
back
it's like,
field.
It becomes like a third rail thing because of how Flacco played at the end of the year.
Right. But you get two capable starting quarterbacks in Huntley and Jameis Winston, who are there, and they'll be on the field. They could be on the field if mm-hmm. things struggle. So the Browns, so they obviously they have the Ravens twice, they have the Bengals twice, and they have the Steelers twice, which is already tough. They're out of conference, or whatever you want to call it, out of division and out of conference schedule. I feel like you get a little bit of a break because you get the NFC East. So you get the Giants and you get the Commanders, but you have the Eagles, you have the Cowboys. I do think that the Commanders are actually going to be halfway decent this year. I think the Giants are going to be better. You have the Chargers, yep. which is not an easy game at that point. Mm-hmm. You have the Chiefs. You have the Saints, who I think got a lot better, especially after upgrading an offensive coordinator. You know, the Broncos are going to be starting a rookie quarterback, so you don't know. The Jaguars, you know, I don't know. I'm a little bit out on them. And your AFC East game is the Dolphins. And that's always a boat race, right? And can you score? Can you do enough? You know, if you get the Dolphins early in the year and they have you down in Miami, it's the weather's different and all sorts of stuff gets complicated. You know, a lot of teams, I'm looking at their schedules, but the Browns to me are this like, you know, maybe I'm making too big of a deal out of it, but it's like, if you start the season like 0-2,
yeah,
like they can't, whereas other teams can, they can't start the season 0-3. That would be a catastrophe. And imagine if the schedule is stacked in a way that facilitates that.
Right. Right. I mean, it's just like, as much as anything else, it's like they won with, what, 4 or 5 different quarterbacks last year. They won with their 4th and 5th tackles. Like, there's a lot of pressure on Deshaun, no question. I'd say I'm also interested to see, are the Jets on the marquee the way that they were last year?
Yeah.
Like, after everything that happened, right?
Point.
Like, and the amount of games that, like, the amount of things that needed to be reconfigured and the amount of bad television, like, that the NFL got because of Rodgers' injury. Does the league go in on the Jets again the same way?
You almost can't, right? Like you it's a weird gamble. Like
you can't plan for a player injury, but the guy is, you know, 40 years old. So like, do you have to be cognizant of the fact that like maybe he doesn't make it through the year, you know? And like, do you, because if Aaron Rodgers, if the And the other side of it is if they have 10 wins like in week 14, now all of a sudden the biggest market in the country with like a superstar quarterback, like a legendary quarterback, now they're like the biggest TV draw you can imagine.
Right.
Right. So do you plan for that or do you plan against what happened last year?
I feel like you probably have to go all in on the Jets, and here's why. But I feel like it creates a cyclical issue that only goes against the Jets, right? So this is probably why TV networks mm-hmm. don't care, right? Is that the Jets are, and I feel like Robert Saleh has done a really good job of starting to pivot away from this a little bit. But because of everybody's entrenched memory of how everything goes with this franchise yep. and how it's gone historically, the Jets are as interesting when they are in a bad position as they are when they're in a good position. And I feel like that was sort of doubly advantageous.
It's like they're the I-95 Cowboys.
Right. And so it's like, you know, if you have whatever, you know, if you have the Jets on Monday Night Football and it's week 6 and Aaron Rodgers is still injured, there's going to be something interesting, yeah. whether it's who they're starting at quarterback or maybe there's, you know, something going on with the team. And with the Jets, I do feel like it gets overhyped. And I'll say this, I mean, having covered the team, their narratives in that building get out of control quickly. And to the point where...
Yeah, no, I mean, in that way, I almost feel for guys like Saleh and Joe Douglas, because it's like regardless, like it's... And I know people who've worked there before have felt this way, like that things would happen with the Giants where if
like
they
the
happened,
same thing, yeah,
the same thing right. would happen with the Giants and everybody be like, oh, no big deal. And then, but when it happens with the Jets, it's like that place is a complete circus.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like it could be the exact same happening in one building to the next, 30 miles apart, same media. And one team is just like, oh, they're just hitting a rough stretch. The other team is here come the Jets again. So that definitely exists with the Jets, no question.
It is. I'm glad you brought up the Jets, though. I really wonder, like, gosh, like the schedule makers last year royally hosed like a quarter of the NFL, just completely put them a mile behind the eight ball to start the season. I think the Jets were one of them.
Do sure. they put the Jets on the opening Monday Night Football game again?
Mm. Yes.
Would they do that?
Yes. Right?
You that have would be to. Really interesting if you did that. You know what I mean?
It would
put them at home.
It would feel
at home
cruel.
Monday Night Football, huh?
It would feel cruel from a... I know that Saleh would be able to spin it, you know, and I think that yeah. he could get his guys ready to play in that. If I were ownership, that would feel cruel to me personally. And it would
feel like you're turning like something that was really hard to deal with into a storyline, right?
Right. And then you're just handing the coach an extra bag of, you know what, you know, before the yeah. start of the season. It's like, here, you deal with this. Now the one advantage is, you know, you have 8 months to, whatever it is, three or four months to prepare for it. So maybe you're fine, but golly, what if they made them the primetime game on Monday night?
I'm pulling up their schedule right now, 'cause I want to like look and see who they're playing. And so Monday Night Football. Ooh, you know what would be good? The Texans coming in there. Because it would be a good way for the league to kind of put C.J. Stroud, D'Amico Ryans on the marquee at the beginning of the year.
Mm.
Texans at Jets. Monday Night Football for week one.
Yeah, because there's no other well... You know what else you could do is you could totally, you could empty all the barrels and put Jets Broncos week one. So you'd have Bo Nix making his first start on Monday Night Football. And then you have the Sean Payton Jets storyline. Mm-hmm. And then
Bo Nix, who's almost as old as Aaron Rodgers.
Oh,
just man. Kidding. Just kidding. Yeah.
Man, I'll say this: I'm already wishing well NFL head coaches. Next week is not going to be fun. You're going to surprise. You have 9 primetime games against your most heated rivals, and your rest differential is like a -5. It's like a good luck to you. But yeah, we'll see. We'll be back. We're going to wrap it all up. as we do. Thanks to Albert, as always, for stopping by. And thank you guys for listening. Thank you to producer Shelby, who remains the best. And yeah, we'll see you guys next week. We're back at full strength here at MMQB. If you missed, you know, we talked a little bit about this stuff at the end of last week. I urge you to, Albert kind of had a nice note, and he reiterated that in his column this morning on SI.com. I'd encourage you guys to just take a look at that, because it means a lot that you guys are still here. We're going to be with you all summer, and we're really excited to be talking football again.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
The Capital Ideas podcast now features a series hosted by Capital Group CEO Mike Gitlin. Through the words and experiences of investment professionals, you'll discover what differentiates their investment approach, what learnings have shifted their career trajectories, and how do they find their next great idea? Invest 30 minutes in an episode today. Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. Published by Capital Client Group, Inc.